Hold on, I do want to show the. Actually, can you have the agenda up also?
Hope you're all doing well. Welcome to another installation of our division meeting. As always, we're going to be recording this meeting. So if you object to being recorded, you can go ahead and stay off camera. But I want to give you a heads up. We will be recording this meeting. We got more people coming in the room. Oh man, now we're up to 76. Wonderful.
I'm sorry. I was eating my lunch and then I got so distracted.
You should never apologize for ingesting macronutrients. I mean, really, macromolecules are important.
It is.
If you take file 130 or 260, you will learn all about that.
Right.
Yeah, so we have a fairly packed agenda. Lots of cool stuff to learn about. Again, I'm trying out this hybrid format just to give us a chance to be here in person if you like, or be online. Again, the in-person attendance is not mandatory, but certainly welcomed if you are so inclined. All right. I think this is our first of division meeting sort of officially of the semester. We had our flex day division meeting, but this is really our first time in the middle of the semester, getting a chance to sort of connect. Before we dive into all the businessy stuff, just by way of general sense of things, anyone want to share? And again, I won't call people, but if anyone wants to share some highlights from the first few weeks of classes. Camille.
Yeah, I had a student in lab use a burette for the first time, and they were so thrilled by it that they might change their major from mechanical engineering to chemistry, which I thought was really fun.
I've always said that burettes are a gateway tool. And they—that's how they get you. That's how they get you. First with burettes, and then all of a sudden you're doing titrations, and it's just—it's the rest is history. So that's great.
Down four.
Down an energetic funnel, as it were, to folding themselves into a chemist. Anyone else want to share some of their highlights?
Oh, I will say something. This is Doug.
Yes.
I just had a student who I overheard him talking about getting an associate's degree from CSM and that he was going to have to take a whole extra semester basically because he needed an extra chemistry. And so I was listening to this and I said, wait a minute. I said, you can get a degree from Kenyatta without doing any of that. And so he's now going to get the associate's in allied health and he's going to get done quicker and he's going to take all the rest of his classes at Kenyatta instead.
Great.
Ooh. Like, way to go.
Well done. We snagged another one.
Yes.
No, yeah. I think we have a lot to offer here at Kenyatta, so that's really exciting. Thank you for sharing. I see Gina and then Sarah.
Hi there, everyone. Happy Friday. I'm just happy to announce that we were able to launch our funeral service introductory course this semester. And we got 23 students enrolled. And for our first, we do recorded live Zoom sessions for the lecture so the students can log in or watch them later. And on the first one, we had 12 students log on in and everyone was very excited about it and engaged. And it's just good news, good stuff.
Thank you for sharing that, Gina. What I want to say, I think Gina has not given herself nearly enough credit. Last year we tried the same class and we got, I think we had 3 students enrolled at the end. But thanks to Gina's incredibly hard work and just getting out there, pounding the pavement, finding ways to connect this program to the community, we now have 23 students enrolled and we are gonna be going forward with some really cool stuff. So kudos to Gina for all the work you've done on making this program really what it is right now.
Woo.
All right, Sarah.
So I'm interloping. I realize I'm a guest, but since my division meeting got canceled for today, I'm just going to presume this is my division today too.
You're
thank you. First of all, second of all, in my linguistics course this week and last week, we were in phonetics and phonology. When I present the material, I say that phonetics, when you're analyzing individual sounds, it's almost like you're looking at a periodic table and you're looking at an individual element or a specific atom of an element. And that when you're doing phonology, which is combining the sounds to see what the patterns are in a given language or a dialect, it's like creating molecules. It's a very basic way of trying to explain it. And I realize there's way more nuance, blah, blah, blah. But when I had one of my students last week say, who is evidently a chem major, say, oh, yeah, you're kind of right. That's really cool. I was so happy for once that a STEM major was like, oh, I see that linguistics is really kind of like a science. I was like, it's a social science, but yay.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. And if it's any consolation, I don't do much on Instagram because I'm old, but one of my favorite things to do is there's a linguistics guy that I follow, and he does some really cool stuff. And it's my new cool pursuit, less nerdy pursuit. It's still very nerdy. For example, the term goodbye is derived from God be with you.
Yes, it is.
From my God be with you to like God bui, and now we have goodbye.
Good. Oh.
And if anybody wants to learn more, hey, Wednesdays 11 to 12:25, the door is open in 3254. Come on by.
There you go. All right, Romke.
Hello, everybody. I'm here. So, you know, as part of the photonics program, one of the experiments the students are working on is to demonstrate invisibility. So if anybody's interested in seeing how it works, they're welcome to stop by 16108 and check out an invisibility cloak.
There's literally nothing to see.
Yes, I'm in, by the way, I'm in the Zoom, in the room there. You can't see me right now, okay?
that's the other 70 people. They're using your cloaking device. It's going really well. And Nathan, I will share you my Insta guy's handle because it's really fascinating stuff in linguistics. All right, anyone else have any highlights? Anyone from in the room have any highlights?
I do.
Yeah.
My in-person Calc students are super fired up. And just yesterday, a student just suddenly comes up to me going, here, can we make a song request sheet? And they had started a list of song requests and then even added the rule maximum 3 songs per person. And so I just got excited that they're just really just enjoying collaborating with each other and talking with each other. And just now we're going to have a class playlist.
Nice. Awesome.
So I think that, very fun energy.
That's a really cool way to engage your students. And as folks have noticed, there's a lot more students on campus right now, so a lot more energy to engage. So that's a really cool way to do it. Thank you for sharing that. Anyone else have some highlights to share?
I have one.
Yes, Swati.
I generally have my students, regardless of which class I'm teaching, I tell them they need to bring a math joke and share with me in the first week.
Nice.
And the nerdier, the better. And I tell them, even if I've heard it a million times, I'll still laugh and I'll still pretend I'm good. So they can be assured. And so this time I've changed it a little bit to say they can come and share it in the class. Before it was they had to come to my office and share with me. So I've been having a steady stream of volunteers and every day we have something.
That is
so
awesome.
The first day I told them I'd go with it. And that's a question for, that's a joke for everybody here. What do you call two people who like math? What would you call them? Yeah?
Math lovers?
You call them algebros.
And media adjourned.
Got what we needed.
Thank you for sharing the algebros. That is, that might be the best one I've heard for a while. Algebros.
I'm putting that in the notes.
Yeah, we had Mike guess squares. All right. Anyone else have any last highlights to share before we dive into our more businessy stuff? Yeah, I agree, Nathan. That's a mic drop moment. I wouldn't want to go after algebras. So in the spirit of that, let's go ahead and move right along. We are lucky enough to have Chris. Do you go Chris or Christopher?
Chris is good.
Chris.
I will follow that. Yeah.
He has the lofty task of following that, but he'll be talking about LAEP funding and some of the ways that we can get funding for students and really get them engaged in research.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And screen sharing is enabled,
yeah.
I believe.
Perfect.
Let me stop the share of the agenda, so you should be able to go ahead.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chris. I'm from the Financial Aid.
Why don't you stand over sort of here-ish? This is one of our first hybrid meetings, so there's still a few.
Yeah.
I will restore the presentation to you.
Yeah.
Let me grab my laptop so I can make sure that I know where I'm at. So my name is Chris. I'm from the Financial Aid Services Department. Today, I'm going to talk to you about the Learning Aligned Employment Program. And I'll just take the seat here.
There you go.
So the Learning Aligned Employment Program, well, first, again, I'm Chris. I'm one of two financial aid services program services coordinators. My counterpart, Jackie Flores, does more external facing work with our high school partners and community outreach. So if you do know someone who is seeking those services, please send them Jackie's way. She is also fluent in Spanish. So if you know any students who need financial aid services specifically in Spanish, please refer them to myself or Jackie. We'll get them the services they need. Onward. The Learning Aligned Employment Program was recently instituted in 2021 by the state of California to provide an additional resource for eligible students to gain career skills and essentially employment on campus or through campus partners, with the contingency that their salaries would be subsidized based on which class of employer or which how the institution or the partner is classified. So because we are an institution of higher education, institutions of higher education in the state of California that participate in this program, who hire students under LAEP, can qualify to have that student salary subsidized up to 90%, or 100%. If they are a not-for-profit in the state of California and we have an MOU established with them, we do have a template. So if you know not-for-profits in the area who would like to participate, or you know for-profit employers who would also like to participate, for not-for-profits, the salary can be subsidized up to 90%. For for-profit employers, it's 50%. However, if we are hiring students on campus under LAEP, we can subsidize up to 100% of the student's salary. The department will only be responsible for paying fringe benefits, which is very minuscule given the ratio of what you're paying. So this program is specifically meant to serve underrepresented students, and I'm going to cover that criteria very shortly. And STEM majors under this program are given priority in employment. So if we have two students applying for the same position and one student is a STEM major and one student is not, the STEM student will get priority. And I'm still learning and I'm still understanding how the differentiators come into play when selecting or not, or when making that critical decision, but do know that your students will be given priority. So when we're talking about underrepresented criteria, students participating in LAEP must meet at least one of these eight criteria to be eligible for this opportunity. So first-gen students, veterans, foster youth, DRC students, undocumented students, low-income students, homeless, displaced students, or you know, if they have been displaced, meaning terminated from a job or whatnot, formerly incarcerated also. Now, low income, we know that it might be very sensitive to talk to your students about their needs or their current situation. So how we qualify low income is if they qualify for financial aid in any capacity, that is low income. So if they qualify for the DREAM Act or the FAFSA at any threshold, they will be eligible for this program. So Further eligibility requirements are that the student is enrolled in at least 6 units and that they have an eligible program of study. So relative to Title IV funds, they have to be in an eligible degree program. That's essentially what this means, which is an associate's degree, a degree for transfer, or a certificate of at least 16 units. The student also needs good satisfactory academic progress or be approved on appeal. They have to be a California resident, regardless if they're undocumented or not, and they have to establish financial need via the FAFSA or CADA. So if they're undocumented, again, they need to be AB 540 eligible to complete the DREAM Act, and they have to have eligibility to work. So if they don't meet one of the former 8 criteria, and also these criteria, they will not be eligible for this opportunity. Now, where you all come in are creating the opportunities for these students. So in creating late positions, we are asking departments across the campus to come to us with proposals. Now, the state of California was very generous in how they defined research criteria in the LAEP handbook because they made it very broad and obscure. Research is essentially defined by the institution. And research does not have to be specifically tied to the student's academic discipline. So you can have a STEM student doing sociological research or vice versa, a sociology student doing quantitative research. I'm expressing that to you all because you kind of have a blank slate and the opportunity to really implement whatever kind of research program you want that you can dream of that fits within this criteria. The state will subsidize the salary of the student up to 100%, which means you're getting a lot of help and funding. The student is getting professional skills, career development, and a portfolio to then take with them, and it's a win-win situation. So once you submit your proposal to our department, we have a form that will be approved or will request that you redraft it. The stipulation in the LAEP proposal is that the job description must have a significant research component. Now, if you're having the student, you know, do general clerical duties or administrative duties, that's fine, but there must be a research component tied to their activity specifically for this to be eligible or for you to qualify, for the activity to qualify. So you get approved. Once you're approved, well, you can, before that, if you'd like to stop, or you can go to this URL at any point. If you're in the room, you don't have to stop and scan that, but go to this URL when you are ready to submit a proposal, follow the prompt, and we will follow up if we need more information or if we need you to modify your proposal in any way. Now, once your proposal is approved, the research does need to be tracked. We will be reaching out at least once per semester to collect a sample of the research being done by the student, and the proposal, the position that is proposed does need a research coordinator or a manager. So whether you're a professor or a staff member, know that when you submit that proposal, either yourself or an assigned designated person will have to manage that research and will be responsible for managing said research throughout the proposal, unless you email us otherwise, and we can change that. But the research will be tracked and documented, and the hours will be tracked for payment through, it's similar to work study. Will they have to track their hours, and then they'll be paid. I believe it's on a monthly basis, but I have to check that. So if you do have any questions, you can go to that URL, my Calendly URL, to set up a specific meeting with me. If you'd like more information, you can also contact our office, Director Vera, and myself will be managing the LAEP program specifically. So if you do have more questions, I will take them now, or you can reach us at your convenience. Do we have any questions?
Yeah, thank you. We have one from Susan.
Sure.
Hello, Christopher. Yeah, I had a couple questions. Is this something that's just at Kenyatta, or is it other schools in the other schools in the district? Then also, any student that has 6 units can and is eligible for the other criteria as well. Like, for instance, could a middle college student do it? And then I had one more question, but I forgot what it was. So, oh, is there a limit? Like how many hours a student could work, or how much each position could be funded for?
That's a great question. I do believe that because these are student positions, the district's limitation on student employment will still come into play. So I would say that the max that the student could work is 20 hours. And that's a district policy. We're going to work within the constraints of that policy so that we don't incur any liability. Yes.
Would that be 20 hours a week?
20 hours per week, yes.
That's
And as far as funding limitation, I'm not exactly sure about the limitation, but I do know that any one position can be funded up to 20 hours per week.
Wow, that's plenty. Yeah, more, okay. Then
the district-wide question, yes. Yeah, so yeah. This program specifically is being piloted by our college. I am the agent for that. I don't know that it's being developed at this point at Skyline or CSM. My counterparts over there are working on other obligations, and this is not at the top of their list. So this is primarily being piloted by our college first, and essentially we are the testing ground, the proving ground, so to speak.
And Ray in the room had a question.
Yes, right.
So this sounds, I don't know if this is Susan's question, but this sounds kind of like an honors research project. So if they do an honors research project, can they also kind of, what would you call it, double back or piggyback on that and have both the research honors project satisfied and also get paid for it?
I do believe that the position, this funding cannot be tied to educational activity. It does need to be specifically a job or employment. If it is credit-based work that the student is working on or anything related to units or academic activity, it is not eligible for reimbursement. It has to be a separate standalone job. But regarding the research, you could create a job tied to said research and hire the student in that position, and that would work.
Thank you.
Sol online, good question.
All right.
Thank you. I noticed that you said it has to be one of the 8 criteria, and then which one is low income. Mm-hmm. But then in addition, it needs to have financial need.
Yes. So if they have if they meet eligibility for FAFSA or the DREAM Act, they do meet that low income criteria. So a student who is eligible for financial aid is eligible for LAEP.
Because one of the problems that I have seen in the past that the family of the student is right above the limit.
Yes.
So these students are not having that any chance.
If their EFC, if a student is slightly above the threshold for qualification, what they could do is come to our office and file a special circumstances or unusual circumstances form. Because the current aid year is based on 2 tax years prior, so 2021 income, if either the student's family, if the student is under 24, or the student themselves has had a change of income, or parent has lost a job, if the income has changed for any reason over the last 2 years, our office can reassess their financial position based on that information. So if you do know a student who may slightly be, or who may have been formally disqualified because of income reasons, please have them reach out to our office and file the special circumstances form or inquire about that, because we can reassess their financial position at this point in time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Susan, do you have another question?
Just one more question. So yeah. I have a particular research need in mind, but I don't have any students in mind. So given, so should I just publicize for students and then see who fits the criteria?
If you submit the proposal, I do have a plan to reach out to my partners in EOPS, Promise, TRIO, to reach out to their student populations, because we do know that students in those programs generally will meet one of the 8 criteria. So if you don't have students in mind, reach out to me and I can work with you to source a pool of candidates that you can select from.
Okay. Great. I'll drop you an email right now.
Thank you. Any more questions before I leave the meeting?
I had a question just with this information, like for the on the student side, is there like a little like flyer that I could put on my door or something?
Not yet, but very soon. Okay. Very soon. Because this is all being rolled out. This really entirely nebulous. It's still evolving. But
exciting.
Will be a flyer and more information will be coming very shortly.
Yeah. And I need to get a copy of the link to these slides too. But
for sure. Crystal will be sharing a link to the slides.
I will be making sure the slide deck is going to be available when I post our division notes on our division website under division meetings.
Perfect.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like I'm the kind of person I'm just like just putting stuff up on the door.
Yep.
Because it's just, that's how I operate. Maybe a lot of students also operate in that same way, where it's just like, it's just at eye level.
Gotta be in your face.
Right?
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. I do that and I put it on my classrooms.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have them in the classroom. I put it on Canvas.
Add it to the Canvas shell, of course.
Yeah. So, whenever you're ready, display, I would love a...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I would love a little flyer.
Well, thank you for the time, everyone. I don't want to take too much of the meeting time. And if there are no more questions, I would like to give the floor to the other speakers.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Chris.
And if possible, can we have a copy of that? Your presentation?
Oh, yes.
Can you send that to Crystal?
I've sent it to Crystal.
Perfect.
And she will be sharing that with you all very shortly.
Wonderful. Perfect. Thank you so much.
I'll actually
send his slide deck out in a separate email, but I'll also have it posted on our website just so people have multiple access points to it.
Great. Perfect. Thank you. Can you pull up the agenda, please, for our next agenda item?
Yes.
All right, so next up on the agenda, Nada, with our distance education updates.
Hi, everyone. It's good to see you. From the distance. I have a couple of distance education updates, but I also have one update that's related to our division, so I might as well start with that one. And I'm going to put just a little document here in the chat. Just give me a second. All right. Right there. So we have a new course. I don't know if you guys can see my screen. Probably can now, right?
Yes.
As some of you know about this, but maybe some of you don't, but I really want you all to know about this. So... the new course is Biology 133, and it's called Emerging Infectious Diseases. So I created this course, I actually started last fall, but it really picked up in the spring, and it passed the curriculum committee in the spring. And so it's going to be listed in the spring of next year, so spring 24. So this is a short description here. What I would like you guys to do is to potentially share this with your students and invite them to look at it. And maybe it's going to be a course that they want to sign up for. We're really hoping to have, a good number of students for the first semester so that the course can hopefully stick and we can develop it further. So right now it is included in these two programs, two degrees, as an elective. It's allied health and interdisciplinary studies. It is going to be offered as a three-unit lecture course. Right now it has no prerequisites, so it's really open and available to everyone. And when I was developing this course, I really wanted to make it like a dynamic course. So there's going to be a portion of the course that provides a good background on emerging infectious diseases and the pathogens behind them. But then I also wanted part of the course to change, right? It's a very relevant subject, and we're constantly facing new emerging infections. And so I want one part of the course to really follow these events in real time. So I will see how it goes. But again, I would really appreciate if you guys share that, talk about it. We're going to try to make information to be spread around the campus. But again, this is my first course I developed. I don't have a lot of experience promoting it. So if you guys with more experience have any ideas for me, I would really love to hear that. Any questions about this course?
We have a flyer for it that we could pass out.
Yeah, we don't have. So I put my flyer in the chat. I don't know if you guys can see it. It's homemade. So it doesn't have an official marketing flyer yet. I'm trying to reach them, and hopefully they will post it around the campus before the enrollment time. But yeah, thank you.
Can we take the course?
All right. So now let me put my DE boots on and continue. I will place another document here in the chat. It's about QOTL training. Okay. I'm seeing that I'm responding. Yeah, that's probably what's happening. Let me try this again. I feel like I'm responding to other threads in the chat. Yeah. Can you guys see the document?
Yes.
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 Okay, perfect. All right. So we have a very long-term schedule for our QOTL training. It's a district-wide effort. And so I think this is the first time that we actually have a schedule for the whole year in advance, which is great because our faculty can actually plan accordingly. We also have a very new way of signing up for these courses. It's through the Vision Resource Center. And so you guys can just click on the sign up link here, and it may or may not take you directly to the VRC. If it doesn't, then there is an additional step that you have to do that I will have to help you with. And so if you're having any issues, just drop me an email and we will fix that for you. But again, you guys are probably familiar with QOTL-1 and maybe even 2. QOTL-1 is the basic training for faculty teaching online. And so anybody teaching online at SMCCD should have QOTL-1 or equivalent, right? And we accept many equivalent courses. We would just need to evaluate your credentials. So this is very important for newcoming faculty. So faculty just starting in SMCCD. So we're really trying to ask all the deans to keep us posted, right? Once we have a new family member in the division, a new faculty member in the division, please notify us so that we can, give them, the most information possible, how to efficiently teach online. And then QOTL-2 builds on top of QOTL-1. It is currently a recommendation to take for our faculty. So if it's been 3 years or more since you've taken QOTL-1, please consider signing up for QOTL-2. It really provides a much more in-depth training in both course design and pedagogy of teaching online. And so again, the dates are now available all the way through the summer. So hopefully you guys can really plan and, you know, sign up for one of those. Any questions?
Questions for Nada. Hello.
How do I sign up? Because I would like to sign up.
Yeah, so I placed a document in the chat. I hope you guys can see it. It says SMCCDQOTL. And so where it says sign up, it will take you directly to the Vision Resource Center. You will sign in with your credentials. And if you're having any issues, please send me an email. There might be an additional step. I know that some faculty had an issue signing up initially into the VRC. Once you have access, it's all good. But yeah, just let me know.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing those documents. Chris is going to send those out to me.
Okay. Awesome. Good. Any other QOTL related questions? I know we also have Allison here, so we are we're working together on many things, including the QOTL. I think Allison's going to talk about her exciting new role in just a little bit. All right, so my last update, it is slightly longer. It's an update on one of our efforts in distance education, which is the POCR and Kenyatta POCR certification. And I will share my slides here just a second. All right. Can you guys see this okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So apologies for those of you who have seen this before. I think I've been talking about this for the last 2 weeks nonstop. I know it's going to be new for some of you, and that's what's important. POCR stands for Peer Online Course Review, and it's one of our projects here with the OTL team, which is now has a few new members, which is very exciting. And this is in collaboration with the POCR work group that is represented by Kenyatta POCR certified reviewers. Okay, there's 14 of us. And this initiative really stems from increasing number of online courses that we've seen over the years. This data is actually from the time before the pandemic, and we all know what happened during the pandemic. The numbers even further exploded, which is great. However, at the same time, we're also seeing a lot of new equity gaps being created by more and more students taking online courses. And this happens especially in certain student groups. This is data from our pre-office. And so we really want to pay close attention to this, and we want to address them as they appear. And of course, we want to decrease them or hopefully even eliminate them. And so in order to do that, we really need to be looking at our online courses and how can we bring them to the higher quality level that addresses this equity gaps. And so in the POCR process, what we do is we take the review tool, which is CVC's POCR initiative, started in 2014. CVC, for those of you who don't know, stands for California Virtual College. And we take their review tool and undergo this very rigorous review process in which an online course is aligned with the CVC OEI rubric. And so CVC OEI rubric is a set of, again, very complex criteria that deals with many different parts of the course, bringing the course to the next level of quality. And so the review outcomes that happen certify this course as a quality reviewed course. Now, what that means is this course is fully accessible. It is highly organized. It is equitable and inclusive. It is very engaging. And then it also meets all the student learning outcomes and course objectives, right? So it ensures that all of these objectives are closely linked to the course materials. Once the course gets the stamp of being quality reviewed, it is also included in the CVC course exchange. And that actually brings it up to the top of the list when any student anywhere in California searches for online courses that potentially they can take. And SMCCD is in the process of becoming home and teaching college as well. That's also a district initiative. So once that happens, the students are actually going to be able to take these courses without cross-enrolling. So they're going to be able to enroll directly without the actual CCC apply. And so this is, of course, very exciting. Before I continue, do you guys have any questions?
I have a question.
Please, go ahead.
So for this process, this applies to online courses that are asynchronous, or is it for synchronous?
I will get to this, but okay. They are online courses. They can be either asynchronous or synchronous. They just have to be fully online. They cannot have an in-person component.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions so far? All right, so in order to review, right, and badge courses as QR courses, CVC used to do all of that. But as you can imagine, the number of these courses is steadily increasing. And so the CVC is no longer to do this work on their own. And so what they started doing was they started training teams at each individual college, so local poker teams, to be able to review and self-QR badge their own online courses. So this requires pretty substantial training, and this training was something that we did in the last academic year. So the 14 reviewers at Kenyatta got together, actually. We started as 14, and then 8 of us continued through this process called Local Poker Capstone. And so we were trained by the CVC to be able to eventually sell badge courses and achieve local poker certification. So this was our final goal. And why is this important, right? So out of all community colleges in California, 45 right now are poker certified, with quite a few of them in progress. So this means over 1,300 courses that are aligned and QR badged this way. And Chaffey College, that was one of the first colleges to really start analyzing the data coming out of this, really presented this pretty substantial study that was based on 23 courses, where they show a substantial increase in online course success rates. And when this is broken down to various student groups, right, the ones where we've seen equity gaps before, you can see a dramatic improvement in pretty much any of these groups. So this process is working and is very promising that way. So our local poker capstone at Kenyatta, right, started in the fall and then continued and finished in the spring. This is how it went. We reviewed 3 courses in sequence, starting with the first course. And after each review, we normed with the CVC. They told us what we're doing well, what we are not doing well, where is room for improvement. And so, of course, our team got better with every subsequent review. And so after the third course, we then were ready to get certified. So this was the timeline, right? We started in the fall of 2022. We reviewed the first course, which was Introduction into Business. And then we continued in January with Introduction into Photography. And then the last course in March was Introduction into Communication Studies. So again, after each review, it was substantial norming. We were trained how to do things better. And so at the end, we submitted all the courses to the CVC, and we were lucky enough to get certified. So in June of 23, Kenyatta became local poker certified campus, which means that now we can review and self-QR badge our online courses. So the next step, of course, in this falls into the fall of 23 is we need more courses to review, right? So we started making a list, and that's why it's important to share this with you. If you have an online course that you would be interested to contribute into the review, we would love to talk more about it. So going back to the question from before, there are some criteria that we're going to be looking at before we actually accept the course. The course needs to be fully online, right? So either synchronous or asynchronous. Your course shell should be authored solely by you, the instructor, although it can, of course, contain various digital materials from other sources. The course should be in pretty good standing as far as already meeting at least some of the OER rubric criteria. We are especially going to be looking at the accessibility status, at the alignment of various course objectives to make sure that the review process is really ready to happen, right? That the course is in good enough standing to begin with so that the review process can be successful. We are calling for instructors, which are course contributors, that are enthusiastic about the course review, right? You can imagine that this does require a substantial amount of work, but the rewards are also quite substantial. There is a compensation that is offered for any instructor contributing the course into the review. And at the end, this way, your course will get lined up for the CVC course exchange, right? So eventually it will be visible and available for enrollment pretty much to anyone, any student in California. So our goal for the fall is to review 5 more courses. And then we have a goal of 5 more in the spring. So we're going to see how this goes. But for the fall, we already have 2 courses that are lined up. The course in public speaking, and then Sarah's course, Introduction to Linguistics. And these are the proposed start dates for the review. So yeah, the word is out. Please think about it. Think about your online courses, if they would potentially qualify, if you are interested to talk more about it. And I would be happy to discuss more, myself and our team. But you can start by sending an email to me, and I can provide any additional information you guys might need.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Yeah, are there any questions?
Right.
I have a few questions. One, out of curiosity, who are the 8 reviewers on our campus? That's just curiosity. So you can choose.
Who are the 8 reviewers at our campus? You will not be able to choose. So our process right now is we will be doing these reviews with 2 reviewers going forward. So 2 reviewers that are going to be reviewing sections A through C. And then Allison, as our new instructional designer, is going to be reviewing accessibility. So pretty much we're going to have a group of 3 reviewers. The 2 reviewers reviewing sections A through C, if we can, right, it's going to depend who has time for that specific course. It's the time investment also on the reviewer's part. But we would like to match 1 reviewer that's more familiar with the discipline and one that is not. So to get different takes on the course as far as the material goes, right? So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Okay. Another question, kind of separate. Can we get access to the OEI rubric that you were mentioning, even if we are not interested in putting our course forward?
Yeah, OER rubric is listed on the CVC on the CVC side, so it's readily available to anyone. The rubric, I think, Allison, it's also linked into QOTL1, correct?
So yeah, we use it in QOTL1, and then I just put a link in the chat.
Here you go.
Thank you.
And so if you decide to contribute the course, we would first send you a pretty pretty substantial self-evaluation form that's based on the rubric. And so that would kind of give you an idea where your course is, and if it's ready for the review or not yet. And then we would give you guidelines how to improve it to the point to where it would be appropriate for the review.
Great. Any more questions? Going once.
I don't think I would submit for the fall, but I would be interested to see if I could submit something in the spring since I'm teaching an online course. So my course isn't fully completed.
Of course. And it's good to start thinking about it before, right? A little bit more time to prepare and polish it. So I would definitely start a conversation now. At least we can kind of do the initial evaluation and see where the course needs a little bit more work before it actually goes into, let's say, spring review. So if you can send me an email so that we have you as a tentative course for the spring, that would be great.
Thank you.
Nada, we had a question in the chat from Barry. What if an online course has been taught by a number of different instructors? Each instructor may have organized their Canvas shell differently.
Yeah, so right now we are only reviewing courses developed by a single instructor. So for example, when we were reviewing Business 100 course, there are several instructors teaching that course in their division. And so they would be reviewed independently unless they developed the course together, unless they developed the shell together. And so in that case, I guess it would be possible to review it as such. But usually when you have multiple people teaching the same course, their approaches are slightly different, right? They're all meeting the same course outcomes, but their approaches are different. Their Canvas shells are different. And so we would be working with individual instructors for the time being. But that's definitely something to discuss. We're going to learn a lot more as we move forward, right? We're going to see a lot more of different examples. Right now we were just limited or we limited ourselves to only 3-unit courses, but, you know, that's also not a limitation, right? We are now open to, you know, to try various things, various scenarios. And because we're so independent now as the Poker Campus, you know, we can definitely learn so much more and go into different directions. Any other questions? And thank you so much for your time. And again, if something else comes up, just email me.
Awesome, thank you so much. And keeping with our DE theme, Allison Hughes, welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and share my slides, get started. Okay, so instructional design at Kenyatta College. I'm sure a lot of you know this, but we now have an instructional designer position at Kenyatta, which will be me. And some of you who might already know me in my previous role as the instructional technologist, and we are going to have that role filled as well, hopefully by the end of the fall. So we're going to have these two positions. So we're going to have a team of more than one, which is really exciting for the first time. but I wanted to come and do a little presentation about what the possibilities are for an instructional designer and collect from you all kind of your topics that you'd like instructional design help with and the modes of support that would be helpful to you. So first of all, what is an instructional designer? Before I answer that question, I have a little poll. There's going to be two polls in my presentation, so you can keep this handy. If you can go to this URL here up at the left, or you can text, and there's also this QR code over here on the right. So the question is, how familiar are you with the role of an instructional designer? So I just want to get an idea
how familiar we are with this role. And I'm going to put a link, the poll link in the chat, if that's easier for anybody. And then we can see where we're at. I've given this presentation a couple times, so I have some previous responses in here. So we're gonna get to see a comprehensive view. So it's looking like almost half of us are not familiar with the role of an instructional designer at all. And then about a third of us are familiar and maybe even have worked with an instructional designer before. And a quarter of us have questions. I like that. So I'm just going to wait a couple seconds, let everyone weigh in. Yeah, so lots of folks are not familiar at all, which is totally fine. Cool. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and move forward. If you haven't responded yet, and you still want to, and I move along, you can drop your answer in the chat, or you can always send me an email if you have thoughts that you want to share as well. Okay, great. So, what is an instructional designer? I borrowed this graphic from our instructional design friends at Skyline. I got asked I was in the business division and they asked me what my superhero power is, and I didn't have an answer for that. So I don't know if I would say that we're superheroes, so ignore that one. But the rest of these we do trainings, we consult on things, we design course materials, evaluate a lot of project management. Instructional designers often serve in a role as a project manager, supporting, faculty in their pursuits, improving their courses and changing their courses, things like that. Analyzing data, building things, a lot of communicating, resource creation, things like that. So basically, this graphic is to demonstrate that an instructional designer can do a lot of different things, and it's going to be up to us what we want our instructional designer to do. But I wanted to highlight that graphic mentions modality nowhere, right? So instructional designers, we support teaching and learning in all modalities. It doesn't have to involve technology. It doesn't have to be an online course. We can provide support for face-to-face courses and online courses and all the modalities in between. So I just wanted to make that really clear that this position and our technologists are not just here to support our online courses. We're here to support all of our courses and all of our faculty. And then I wanted to really talk about instructional design support possibilities, right? So like I said, an instructional designer can do many things, and we have a lot of possibilities for what that can look like for us at Kenyatta. So these are just a few that I drafted, just to get us thinking about what this position could look like for us. So on an individual level, an instructional designer, I can provide one-on-one consultations, which a lot of you have actually done with me in the past, one-on-one meetings where we discuss an issue or something you're trying to do. Course design support, transitioning a course from face-to-face to online, or online to HyFlex or multimodal, or any other modality transitions. And then also an instructional designer can just serve as kind of an idea generator or a sounding board. If you have an issue that you want to solve or a new idea that you want to implement, an instructional designer can be a great source of just, you know, helping you come up with the possible ways you can do those and determining which would be best. And then similarly, the possibilities are there for department and small group consultations and support. We can do discipline-specific work if you want to align shared course materials or do aligned assessments across sections. Or say, if you go through program review and you identify some equity gaps in your department, an instructional designer could be really helpful for identifying what are some possible ways to address those equity gaps or try to address them. So lots of possibilities that now that we have this new position. And then, like I mentioned at the beginning, we are going to have a technologist and a designer. And the question I get a lot is, what is the difference between those two? And to be honest, they're going to be very similar and they're going to overlap. So ideally, the technologist is going to support the technical side of teaching and learning. They're going to be our Canvas administrator, doing all that work that I was doing before, answering your Canvas questions, how to do things in Canvas, things like that. Whereas the designer will be answering and supporting more of the pedagogical side of things, like how best to do things, what are the possibilities, you know, how can we best meet our learning outcomes, things like that. And so I outlined some questions here that you might ask the technologist versus the designer, just to demonstrate how, you know, this is really two sides of one coin. So you might be going to the technologist to ask them a question like, how does Grammarly work in Canvas? What is ChatGPT? And you might go to the designer to ask a question more like, how do I deter cheating with AI apps in general? How do I create assignments that are kind of AI proof, right? So those are some of the differences, but they're going to be very subtle. And the technologists and I are definitely going to have to navigate how best to support you all in our different roles without creating extra steps for you to get all of these questions answered, right? So that's something to consider, but this just gives you an idea of the differences between the positions. So before I keep going, any questions, any comments? Okay, I'm going to carry on and we'll have more time for questions at the end if anything comes up. Okay, so another poll, that same link that I put in the chat before. Do you think an instructional designer will be able to help you improve your courses now that you have kind of an idea of what an instructional designer is? Do you think it'll be helpful for you, this position? Okay, lots of yeses, some not sures, but lots of yeses. And no no's. I still haven't gotten a no, so that's always exciting. Great. Okay, great. So lots of people saying yes, but a good quarter not sure. Awesome. Thank you all for responding. I appreciate it. Great. Okay. I'm going to move along. If you don't get to respond to the poll, like I said before, you can drop it in the chat or send me an email if you have thoughts that you didn't get to enter. And then also, I have a really short survey that I'd love everyone to respond to. It's really short, just giving me an idea of the topics that you might want instructional design support with and how instructional design support would be most helpful for you. And then some spaces to share challenges and things like that that maybe we can work on addressing. So you can use this URL here on the left or this QR code here on the right. And I'll put the link to these slides in the chat as well if you don't catch the URL before I go on. And then lastly, I just wanted to share with you how to get instructional design support this semester. So I'll be offering office hours on Wednesdays from 11 to 12. I'll be on Zoom and in my office. You can attend either way. And then I'll be doing, like I mentioned, a lot of those individual small group discipline consultations. So I have this Calendly link here where you can sign up for any type of consultation. And I have these different lengths of meeting outlining kind of how much time we might need for each type of consultation. So if you have any idea that you might want to work on, please use that link to book a consultation, or you can always email me if you'd like to meet to chat about something to see if we can work together. And then lastly, here's just a little list of some of the FTLCL and Flex workshops I'll be doing this semester. So we have a series of AI ones and then some just general instructional design ones. And if you have questions about those or want more information on those, just shoot me an email and I'd be happy to chat with you about them. I'm going to stop sharing. And like I said, I'll share these slides in the chat. So you don't have to try and remember the links. But yeah, any questions or comments?
Thank you so much. Questions?
not a question. I'm just going to email you about something very specific.
Yeah, please do. Please email me.
All right, so thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, next up on our agenda, Sarah Harmon, ZTC.
Yeah, so I'm going to show a couple slides. I'm not necessarily going to share them because it's more of a thank you to this division. You folks are, can I just say, flipping amazing. Let me get into presentation mode of the slides too.
It's in the minutes,
and you can change that flip into whatever you want it to be, Crystal.
We'll just stay with
that. Flipping.
Okay. all right, come on, dude. Maybe or not. I'm gonna leave it like this. Okay. Sorry about that. I will make this just bigger. There we go. So in my role as a coordinator for all things open educational resources, Aero Textbook Cost. I had to start mapping out our GEs. Can I just say massive shout out to you folks. By far and away, the division with the most GEs converted to zero textbook cost. And most of that through open educational resources. So we're talking textbooks, homework ancillaries. This is not even counting the fact that I think chemistry in particular, but there's a couple of programs that have low cost as well. So that's not even counting the low cost ones. So math is almost completely converted for their GEs, for the courses that fall under GEs. The physical sciences, really strong representation. Biological sciences, you're getting there. We're working on things, but there's more to come on there. And even in the labs, like, good job. Seriously, good job. And this leads to the fact that we're starting to create pathways, and look where most of those pathways exist. It's you folks. Chemistry, math, physics. And realistically, what started this was the fact that math and physics kind of started leading the way in converting so many of their courses, which means most of the STEM degrees, you know, you have math and in many cases, at least one physics course associated with your associate, your ASCs. So in doing that work, it has a ripple effect in so many other programs. So a thousand thanks to you folks. And it's also a call out to say, hey, look, if there are others who wish to join in this work, please come do so. So first of all, the Textbook Affordability Subcommittee of Academic Senate, I need a division rep from you folks. I would love to have that perspective. We meet on the fourth Tuesday of the month, right before EAPC. So we're in from 1 to 2. We're going to be in the faculty lounge, which is a quick walk over to 17107 at 2 o'clock to go join EAPC. Crystal, did I do a good enough job in linking those two? Okay. Just making sure. We have a lot that we're going to talk about this year, specifically with some of these pathways that are being developed, engaging students, engaging faculty. We have all sorts of conversations. So if anybody wishes to join, first of all, the meetings are open to the public, period. So come and join us to hang out. We're a fun group. At least I think we're a fun group. But if you wish to officially be on the committee itself, I am looking for a division rep from you folks. Would love to have that perspective. Diane Wakeham served last year and was really helpful in giving us, I realize not every discipline in your division is exactly the same, but having that perspective, even just from one viewpoint, is helpful. Nada does serve as on this group because she is the DE coordinator, but would be great to have two science folks. That'd be great. You want to join, right? I'm pleading, really. That's really all I'm doing. The other big reason I'm here, though, is to talk about the adopter program. So we are still accepting applications through this weekend. I might extend to Monday because I only have one application right now in. It's not a science person, so you didn't get the first application in, folks. I'm sorry. You lost that battle. But let's go join the war. this can be for converting a course that has never been converted before. So for example, biology, like I said, I know there's a number of courses in your discipline that have not been converted that I know of. Or it can be somebody who's teaching a course that's already been converted, but just wants some support in adopting the material. So a great example would be anybody teaching a math or physics course that has already been converted by others in the departments. If a new person wants to help, let's try this one again. If a new person wants to have help in using and setting their materials up and getting their course ready, they can apply for these for this fund as well. Our fall cohort, like I said, applications run through the weekend. There is a link. It's not always very clear, but it's right there. I wish the design language of our websites made links a little bit easier to see. This is kind of difficult sometimes. So the link is right there. It's a form stack. We have two main categories, which is just straight adoption, meaning somebody else has already converted the course, either at Kenyatta, even our colleagues in Skyline and CSM, if they're already using something and you're just taking what they've already set up, that's a straight adoption. It's a $750 award. If you have not gone through our training or something similar, then we'll also give you funding, a $500 award to do the training as well. And that's to get a background in what is it to use open educational resources, a little bit of some training on accessibility as well, because that is always at the forefront of this work. Is it does us no good to have course materials that a sizable chunk of our student population can't use, right? So we want accessibility built into this. If you are remixing, meaning you're taking maybe materials from two or three sources, combining them, maybe sprucing up your Canvas course shell along with it, that would be a remix project. That's a $2,000 award. And again, if you need training, then we can provide you with that training as well with the $500 training award. And we've had, like I said, a number of folks in this division already go through the adopter program. We have others who have just done the work on their own, which while I appreciate and I get it, I'd like to give you some money for it and recognize that that's work to go through this type of work. It's a commitment, but it's one I hope that you find rewarding. So yeah, questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, complaints. I'm going to put the link in the chat in a second here.
Great. Thank you. Questions, folks.
I will say we will also have a spring 2024 cohort. We will have a summer 2024 cohort, a fall 2024 cohort. So it's not like this is the last chance. We've got money, folks. We're going to be doing it. Camille, hi.
Hey, thank you, Sarah. If you wanted to make adoptions for a course that has a sequence, so like Gen Chem 1, Gen Chem 2, is that something that could happen all at once, or do I have to parse that out bit by bit?
It's a good question. Most people tend to parse it out one semester, or one cohort, and the next cohort. That being said, as somebody who also teaches in a discipline with sequenced courses, sometimes it's easier to do it all in one fell swoop. I would say it really depends on the course itself or the series. I know so many of the STEM courses are like my Spanish courses. We're talking 4 and 5 unit courses here. We're not talking about, not saying a 3-unit course is easy, but it's a lot less work to convert those courses. So that might be just a conversation that you and I have, or faculty member and I have, to say, hey, let's see what it is. If it's not that much to convert both, we can wrap it up all in one.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? And of course, Sarah is very accessible, and you can contact her with questions if they occur to you after the meeting.
Please do.
And Sarah, as always, you are welcome to join the coolest division on the campus. You can tell your other divisions, I said it. We'll have cross-campus wars. It'll get real ugly, but then we'll find peace and we'll we'll go from there.
I just want to join the iDeans meeting when you say that, and Hyla and James in particular have to deal with you.
I haven't the courage, but yes. Maybe something.
Thank you, folks, for inviting me. And yeah, you have my email address. Holler if you need me.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
All right, so I think we're on to, let's skip ahead to the standing agenda items. Any reports from our shared governance folks? Anything particularly pressing that you want to share out? Crystal?
Not particularly pressing, but our first AAPEC meeting of the semester is happening on the 26th, which is a Tuesday, 2:10 to 4 o'clock. We're meeting in the Cultural Center and online, Zoom link on our website. Please join. All are welcome.
Great. Thank you. Ray?
As a member of PVC, we were tasked to try to find faculty who might be interested in joining College Annual Plan for implementation for the 5-year Educational Master Plan. And there are slots and places to attend for faculty in particular. Our EMP 2.8 is going to try to, so the Educational Master Plan 2.8 says provide regular accessible planned and intentional professional development opportunities, including implicit bias, anti-racism training every 2 years to all employees that sustain their personal growth and professional development over the course of employees' careers. So this and many other EMPs were addressed, and they're looking for small work groups. And so if you're interested in any of that, I have the draft of this presentation that Kim Lopez, our president, gave, and I'll put that in the chat. And then the rest of the meeting, there are some personnel announcements, and you can see that from the board meeting, and some budget information that our VPA gave. And program review reminder. So if you're gonna do program review sometime soon, this year, this semester, whatever, you should know that by now, I hope. And you can find that information online as well. That's it.
Great, thank you. Anyone else? We'll move on to our NSF scholars. Sumati.
We have applied, or I have applied for an extension, and I have not heard from the program officer. I just found out that the program officer has changed.
Okay.
So I'm waiting to hear from them. But pretty much it says it's grantee approved, so I'm assuming that we are just going to have one more year.
Yeah.
And since we've already surpassed our original plans of having 49 students, we've already had 53 at the moment. So we could probably add 4 or 5 more.
Great.
But I'm still waiting for a meeting next week with the business office to have a better idea of how much money we have. As far as our mentors are concerned, we would love to have mentors continue, or at least let us know if they want to continue or they want to take a break. And if anyone else, any of the other faculty are interested in being mentors, please email me or Josue, and we would love to have you on board. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Our trabajo grant, Ramke and Rance. Any updates? No pressure, but certainly just giving you a space.
I think Rance is going to provide the update. Thank you.
Rance, you're on. No, no pressure.
Yeah, I'm good.
Rance, your audio is not coming through. Unless this is your way of avoiding the issue, which would be very clever. You'll have to give this via interpretive dance if you can't get your audio to work. There it is.
There it is. Okay. So the 23rd, we are having a conference at Stanford for regenerative medicine. So if you guys have the flyer, receive the flyer, I can put it in the chat. So that's one of the things we're currently working on. And then also, you know, we're putting together, I'm currently working on a series of workshops for our students to prepare for internships. Also, how to record data. See what else we discuss. Well, there's various workshops that we're, you know, currently planning, and I'm going to tap some of you all on the shoulder to see if you want to contribute in facilitating the workshop. So I have the themes and the titles, but as I'm currently working them up, I will be reaching out to some of you. And I will put in the chat the flyer for the workshop at Stanford. It's currently full. We have 130 participants, but we do have a wait list. So we encourage your students to join the wait list. And I'll see if I can bump others to get them in. So that's the plan.
So I would like to just add on to Ramses' update that the workshop, the goal of the workshop is to really build the confidence in our students to either, you know, to apply to an RU and participate in it, to participate in job shadows, participate in mentorship programs with people in industry, which is part of the Trabajo grant. And generally, for example, if they go to the conference, we also want them to really participate by at least meeting a few folks at the conference and getting their contact information and, you know, getting some ways to really reach out to them when they have questions, rather than just being a passive activity where they're just going to go and listen to people speak. So really, it's giving our students the confidence to go and interact with people. So in a way, it's building their ability to network, you know, with people when they go out to conferences and things like that. So that's our goal through these workshops, or one of the goals through the workshops. Besides building real skills, you know, how to work in a lab, how to collect data, how to present data, those have already been developed by Sharon when she was here in the first year of the grant, and Arans is continuing to build off that and add some new components to it for the students.
Great, thank you. Any questions about that?
Oh, one question.
Yes.
Are we going to have job shadowing in the fall, or is it only in the spring?
So I'm trying to work in some in the fall. So that's the plan.
Yeah, so I think we try to separate out the various activities over the two semesters. But I think this year, Rans is trying to have job shadows both in the fall and the spring.
Thank you.
All right, are there any other general announcement? I know, Attila, you sent in the flyer for the October 14th event. We'll get that out to everybody. But just by way of reminder, we will be having our solar eclipse party. And I don't want to steal Attila's thunder, but maybe I'll let you go ahead and give another shout out about that.
Yeah, we will always keep on repeating. I will be brief this time. Yes, October 14th, that's a Saturday morning. It should be in your calendars already. In case you can't make it, get yourself one of these kinds of glasses, the ones that are specifically certified, CE, and check the exact viewing on timeanddate.com. Just Google Time and Date Eclipse 2023. Other than that, the Astronomy Club has voted that our our nighttime star party is going to be, as usual, the last Friday of October. That's the 27th. You can dress up in costumes.
I believe that you meant you have to dress up in costume in order to be eligible to attend.
Yeah, certainly to get food, because there will be free food at the star party.
Food and costumes and stars.
Yes. Can't beat that.
What should I dress up as?
Dealer's choice. All right, thank you. Let's see. In terms, so just division business, we don't have that many division business things. I did want to point out that we, in the next, towards the end of the semester, you're going to see some changes around building 23 and in the STEM Center. The GANAS grant, which concluded, we're in sort of our no-cost extension year, which terminates at the end of this month. We had about $250,000 left. So we decided to spend that money on buying those isolation pods. So in our facilities master plan, it was noted that students were looking for individual spaces to be able to engage with Zoom classrooms, et cetera. And so in keeping with that theme, we decided to use the remaining $250,000 to outfit the STEM Center as well as parts of building 23 in the sort of common areas with these large pods that students can engage in individual Zoom lessons. We have a couple of ADA compliant ones in both the STEM Center as well as building 23. So they'll be larger as well as the smaller ones for that are not ADA compliant, but certainly are still wonderful pods nonetheless. So you'll see some more about that in the coming months. It's a work in progress. The POs haven't yet gone out. Yes.
What are the pods called again?
Let me see. I mean, I don't know what they're called.
What are we calling them? Like study pods?
Just study pods. Let's call it study pods for the order. And actually, I can pull up, if anyone's interested, I can pull up the picture of them.
Study chambers.
Chamber of Secrets. So like I said, these are items that were noted in our facilities master plan as things that really would be beneficial for students. So we'll have those. All right, any questions about that before we move on to our last bit? Actually, let me see if I can show you the pods. Yeah. Unless they don't care about a quote, let me show you the pod itself.
Cool.
Okay, and they're from a company called Orange Box, which is... Doug, I see you have a hand up. Doug, are you...
Well, it would help if I unmuted myself. Yeah,
it often does. Yes.
I don't have a question, but I have a. I just wanted to make a announcement to the rest.
Yes, please.
So I ran into Sumathi and I ran into Michael Hoffman yesterday, and I believe you all got emails from him today about it. But the union really does need to know whether or not we support going to an impasse, or whether or not we would rather just settle with the contract that we the progress they've made on the contract, and then reserve the rest of the items for our next contract, which would be like in a year and a half or something, or 2 years from now. I think because the union is at a decision point about which path to take. Do we settle with what we have, or do we move, or do we fight for continuing to fight and enter this whole impasse process. So he asked that we make some sort of statement about that, and hope that people will give him some feedback, or attend the union meeting to give them feedback about how they're feeling about the progress that's been made and what they're hoping for in the next contract.
To that, Doug.
Camille, go ahead. Sorry.
So to give you some context for those of you that may not know, this impasse is happening as a result of 8 issues that the district is currently refusing to negotiate, one of which is pay and compensation. So we have provided AFT's proposal for pay and compensation, and the district is no longer interested in continuing negotiating on that issue. Other important topics on this contract cycle are things like parental leave, things like summer contract issues, other things like academic freedom and the ability of professors to have sole control over assigning grades and their courses. So there are still a lot of really important things that are left kind of at the bargaining table that have yet to be resolved by the district before they declare impasse. So if you can show up to the general union member meeting next Thursday, the 13th, if that's the correct date, It's Wednesday the 13th. We would love to hear your feedback on how these issues are important to you, what you would like to do moving forward.
Great, thank you. Any questions? So I want to make sure we have a time. Oh, what time is the meeting?
It is 2:30 next Wednesday. You should have an email invite from Marianne. If not, I can send that to you, Leslie.
All right, thank you. And
thank you. I think I'll have to look for a recap. We have a state inspection and I have class all at that same time. But yes, would like to know more.
And can I add one thing? Even if you can't make it in person, you can definitely attend via Zoom and make sure that your voice is heard.
Great, thank you for that. And just circling quickly back, I want to make sure there's no other comments on that. I don't want to cut it off without giving space for the discussion, but I want to circle back and show you the pods I was referencing. So these are the ones that are going to be in Building 9 and in the STEM Center. Here we go. So it looks something like this. So I believe this is one of our ADA compliant ones. They're a little bit larger, big enough for a wheelchair to be able to roll into. Then we'll have several other smaller ones that will be for an individual student, some which will have the lower chairs, some which will have more sort of almost bar stool types chairs in them. So just to give you an idea. So you'll see those peppered throughout Building 9 and Building 23.
That's cool.
God, pods, man.
So are the doors glass, Amir? Are they are the doors a form of glass?
Yeah, I can't. I think it's like a glass, like a plexiglass, certainly safe and not shatterable necessarily.
And open, like not solid.
Yeah, there's venting on the top so that you can suffocate inside there.
No.
Really good idea not to suffocate students.
Yes. Students first around here, right? That's part of our student first strategy is to not suffocate our students.
We're not donating to the funeral service education.
All right. So
that was bad. Crystal?
That was Crystal.
You just went way off the rail there.
We don't have any dead bodies, okay?
We are not testing that class.
These are very safe. In fact, they've built-in ventilation.
I think we should stop before we go any
further. Yeah.
Keeping in mind this is being recorded and being in the minutes, so we'll keep that all
together. We're a fun bunch.
So they'll have filters as well as the larger ones actually have like a cantilever mechanism. I can't call it the proper term, but they will open up at the top so that if there's, let's say, a fire, they'll have access to sprinkler systems overhead. So,
cool.
So there's all sorts of safety pieces built into them.
Wow.
And they'll be here. Wow. All right.
A lot of napping going on.
Well, students need to nap. I mean, if it's isolation, if they need to nap or engage with Zoom, they can certainly use those pods for those purposes. Great. With the last, we have about another 20 minutes or so. I did want to give folks some time. Leslie, do you have a question?
One last step. Now,
yes.
This is more of a request. Can we have a list of all the faculty who are division reps for different committees?
Yes.
So that way we know who is in which committee.
Yes, yeah, so I can work with David Eck on that. We've been slowly putting together a list.
Awesome.
Updating that list. That's a very good point. That's a good point and a reasonable request, and I'm working on that.
Thank you.
No, thank you for the question. So we'll get that out as soon as possible. And then Crystal, can you also make a note of that, please? All right, so we have another 20-ish minutes or so. I did want to give us time to break out to our departments. So Crystal, are those rooms ready?
They will be ready in 2 seconds. I was making notes.
There's more than that person there.
No,
it's just the three of us.
Yeah.
And we are in person.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're required to go be the breakout rooms. I don't want you mingling.
My isolation pod, I'll put a wall of desks.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on.
So we'll go ahead and open up the rooms. And of course, if you want to, if you are so inclined, you decide to adjourn, early, that's fine. Certainly, there's no remaining business. I'll stick around and I'll sort of float through the rooms. And then if I'll stick around 3 o'clock, if people wanted to chat a bit, doing office hours type things. But if you are done and you don't have anything else to discuss in your rooms, by all means, feel free to take the rest of your day and the rest of the, I guess, 20 minutes that we had left, and that's your time back. But I did want to say right before we adjourn that I'm very excited about the semester. I think I said it in the beginning, but I think it bears repeating. There's a lot of really good energy on campus right now. The students are here, the students are back. We've got some opportunities for funding for research. There's some cool stuff happening. So I'm very happy to be a partner with you in all of this, and please let me know how I can help.
Thank you.
Rooms are open.
All right. If I don't see you before then, have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves, your friends, family, loved ones, etc. Enjoy.
Thanks, you guys. Raphael's not anywhere to be found. So
then you can just break out.
Break out, yeah. That will be good. And then I guess I would say, Amira, I just wanted to bring up checking in with the counselors. I guess there's some discrepancies, as you've seen, on websites and course descriptions and what's required.
Sure. So
I put out a proposal that we meet with the counselors after you follow up with, I think you were going to follow up with, I don't even know who, about the math and what constitutes what. So once that's figured out, maybe we can meet with counseling and get our website to match and be more clear.
Yeah, so I chatted with Raphael about this a couple of days ago, and he's going to be working with the curriculum committee, specifically Frank Nguyen, who's sort of taken over for where Jose Pena left off, as well as Lisa Palmer, who is the chair of the curriculum committee. So they will be the ones to shepherd that work.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think we just need to be really clear.
Yes, absolutely.
It's for everybody. Okay. Thanks. You guys have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Okay. See you on Monday.